One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice.
Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscience, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. And I am Michael Eric Owens.
And I am DT, and we're back on the mic.
Back on the mic.
Once again, episode 49.
49, and we have 50 coming up, oh, folks. Man. We're going to do something real special. We can't even talk to you about it, but it's going to be... It's going to be interesting. Let's just say that. Maybe funny. Maybe a little scary.
You want to lighten it up a little bit for the 50th show?
Yeah. We're going to have fun for the 50th show, man.
Okay.
Depending
on what's going on that week.
Yeah, what takes place that week.
We have something new to say.
And, you know, but it's another milestone. We got over 6,000 likes.
Man, wow.
On our Facebook page.
Thank you.
And
if I could say it 6,000 times, I would, but it would take the whole show too. So right. Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate the love and support and, you know, from all across the globe. I mean, that's what's so exciting. It's from every sector of the world. And, yeah. And that's exciting when you know that people are tuning in, listening, reading, just engaging with the show. I mean, that was our desire, from the start. So we thank you. We got a goal of what, DT?
10,000 by 10, the end 000. Of the year, though, not just in general.
Yeah.
We'd like to get to the, 15 million mark, but right now we'll settle for 10,000.
We'll settle for 10. So help us do that. Listen, invite your friends to like it. Talk about us at every opportunity that you get and share One Mic, One Voice. But I have something exciting. You know, we've been so heavy lately.
Here he go. Here this guy goes again.
You know, we've been so heavy
getting
lately.
Getting to brag again. Go ahead.
You know, it's been so heavy lately, and it's nice to do something that I think lightens things up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we had my daughter Leah Marie in the studio, the actress, the model, the resume continues to roll out, but she is the latest. She appeared in Joe's video. She's the main and the only.
No.
The only lady in the video, and those of you who know Joe, you know he's a top selling artist. What we're going to do right now, we're going to play this video for you. It's actually on our page too. So you can go actually see her. You can't miss her because she's the only female in there. But we're going to go ahead and give Joe some love. Folks, sit back and listen to the smooth sounds of Joe.
All right.
Never knew tears could make an ocean blue. Fear of forever is a door that I don't want closed, closed. Pictures and pictures of the smile I remember, this just can't all be true. I hope he makes the biggest mistake, the unforgivable that makes your heart break. I hope you tell him sorry's just not enough, and it goes from good to bad, so I can have you back. So many memories tell how long it's been. Accept the blame as to why you're with him. He wouldn't approve of us just being friends. Please, that's all I need. Out of respect, I'll back away for a while, but promise to keep me in mind.
what do you have to say to that?
Man, wow, I don't, you know, when she sent it to me, and I looked at it, man, I'm just thrilled for her, for the work that she's doing. And I like the fact that it's a classy video.
That's right, that's right.
You know, we see so many young girls in that industry, and you know what they're doing.
Backing up thing.
Right. Hey, Pops don't want to see that.
Like it's hot.
right. No, Pops don't want to see that, man. But just say, I like the song, too.
Yeah, man, that's a good song. I'm sorry for Joe that he didn't do the right thing to keep his woman, but, man, that's critical.
Yeah, that's...
Don't be that guy having to sing the song trying to get your woman back, man. Do the right thing.
Yeah, and the way she was doing her hands, yeah, she argued like that, too. So I don't know if she was acting on that part, but yeah, no.
So there's some truth to the video,
there's some
right?
truth to the video right there. But, you know, we had her in the studio, her and Josh Kay. A few months back, and of course they are the creators of our theme song, One Mic, One Voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. And so I'm just thrilled to see the work that she's doing, and it's just nice to be able to debut that here on the One Mic, One Voice show. Mm-hmm. Folks, support Joe, support my daughter, go out, buy the song, just don't look at it, buy it. We need to support our artists that
those
are out
YouTube
here
views
doing it.
Count too, though.
Say what now?
I said those YouTube views count too, though.
That's correct.
So the more they watch, they don't have to even buy it. There's still money contributing to the system. So
that is true. That is true. Folks, listen, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
What's up, guys? I am Leah Marie, owner of The Selfie Gods. Make sure you head over to our website, www.theselfiegods.com, and order your very own selfie moon. If you need that good lighting whenever you out in the club or you out hanging out with your friends and you need some more light for your selfies, that's definitely what you want to get, the selfie moon.
Hey guys, my name is Jeremy Burudi. I'm from Africa, in a country called Kenya, in a city of Mombasa. And Africa love the One Mic, One Voice broadcasting. Keep it locked. Love you guys. Cheers. I'm out.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. You know, DT, we have had some distinguished guests.
Always.
On One Mic, One
Voice.
That's
a requirement.
You know,
is your distinguishment. Right? You cannot just be some regular Joe walking in off the street trying to get on the One Mic, One Voice.
Because
show.
We do have folks trying to get on.
Yeah, all the time.
That
Mike, can you let me talk about. No, man.
But man,
we don't care who's the biggest Muppet right now. We've got bigger issues. Bigger fish to fry tonight.
And we are so, so thrilled and honored to have in the studio my good friend, Steve Hill. And, you know, Steve is, I'm talking about his current position. He is the chief of staff for the mayor of Oklahoma City, which happens to be the number one mayor in the nation. So he's the man right next to the man. And he has over 20 years of experience, of course, in the PR industry. He's done work in Texas. I mean, he has been, he's also worked for mayors before. Steve also sits on the Arts Commission with me in Oklahoma City. And let me just say this. He's not a stranger to radio. So see, he been holding back on me, right? He's like, man, I listen to the show this day, other thing. He probably been critiquing. So we got to make sure Steve don't outdo us now. So that be saying, man, that y'all need another host on there. But Steve has done radio, man. And I will say, just on a personal note, man, he's one of the coolest cats that I know, and I just appreciate having him on the show. Steve, welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show.
Thank you. Yeah, I was one of those people who actually begged to be on the show. Every time I'd see Michael
around
town.
So it's true. It's true.
Hey, let me on. I don't care what we talk about. Just put me on.
And one thing I will say, as I always kind of say about myself and DT, Steve does not speak for the mayor's office or for Oklahoma City. Simply, these are three guys sitting around the mic, sharing their hearts and their outlook on what's going on today. And Steve's going to be here for the rest of the show with us, guest hosting. So, Steve, the mic is yours. You can come in anytime, and we're just happy. But, man, I'm kind of sad you ain't got no special mix, though.
Yeah, declined it. He declined it early.
Like, I feel left out now. So maybe, you know what? Can I retroactively accept?
Oh, yeah, you can retroactively accept. Oh, definitely. We're going to make that happen. But you know, let's talk about, you know, I was criticized. I don't know if you know what I posted on, like Richard said, like, whenever you haven't been criticized, right? But, you know, I was criticized for not being balanced. So I posted something on there. And clearly this person doesn't understand the journey through which I have come. Huh. And I've been criticized by black folks and white folks for the things I've said inside and outside of the black community. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on in Chicago, DT.
Okay, so Chicago has been a victim, I suppose, as all of us have known them to have lots of violence going on, gun violence, kids getting shot, highest murder rates in the years for years past. But Flager,
mm-hmm.
Mike Flager has taken on an initiative to do something about that. This guy is a Catholic priest in the African American community, been serving there for over 40 years, 98% black congregation, largest black Catholic university, Catholic church in Chicago. Mm-hmm. They hold a crusade, you know, against gun violence, trying to come up with some solutions to help improve the things that are going on there, as well as bring awareness to people who are not facing those type of things. So,
You know, I had, Steve, the great honor when I went to the premiere. I was my daughter's date, bringing her back up, right, to the premiere of Chirac. And the part of the film was actually filmed in his church. And that Sunday, we had the opportunity to go to his church. Matter of fact, I have that sermon that we're going to play when we can find the time to play snippets of that on here. And I have to tell you, man, you talk about a dynamic dude.
Hmm.
Oh, my God. You talk about the passion. He's real. I mean, this is not something. He lives on his church is on the south side where all the violence is happening. And he's been doing that for 40 years. He's actually been sanctioned by the Catholic Church for many of the things that he stands up for. As a matter of fact, they had so many media outlets there that day, man, and he turned to the media and he said, you know what, I'm not gonna let y'all off the hook either. And he went in on them. I mean, this guy truly cares about the violence that is happening in there and the solutions to him. And in the movie, John Cusack actually plays him.
He's in that movie?
He's in
that character?
Yes.
I saw an interview with him where he was talking about how many funerals he'd attended.
Mm.
And it was just, you know, it's heartbreaking.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Wow, man. I mean, when you think about, you know, a lot of us talk about these issues really from the periphery, right? You know, we can talk. But when you are inside, when you are in the struggle,
mm-hmm.
when you are seeing the pain of the people, you can't turn away.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. I mean, he could go anywhere, really, to be honest with you, and be a priest and mm-hmm. do. Many priests travel from parish to parish and this thing. But he has made a conscious decision to be there in the midst of one of the worst and dangerous environments in the United States.
Yeah, it's terrible. You know, it brings up the larger issue of gun violence in America. And I just want to get this off my chest, and I'm glad I'm just speaking for myself today, because I certainly don't represent anyone's views but my own on this. But, you know, you hear people, whether it's President Obama or whoever, Hillary Clinton currently running for office, and they talk about wanting to have some kind of sensible legislation in regard to guns. And, of course, everyone makes all the noise they make about that topic.
You're going to take my guns away.
There, exactly.
Nobody wants me to have a gun anymore.
So they always bring that up about Chicago, and they always say, well, look at Chicago. It's got some of the most restrictive gun regulations in the country. Well, yeah, it does, but it's also 5 minutes away from Gary, Indiana, mm-hmm. which does not. So, you know, the problem is we need a national view on this issue, and you can't – these – gun nuts, I'm going to call them, sorry. Yeah. And they're all going to be after me now. Do you have how many listeners do you have?
Yeah.
6,000.
But they're all cool, right? They're not.
They're all on the same page.
Yeah. But, not using guns at all.
But they keep coming up on this, you know, they keep bringing these straw man arguments that, you know, well, it doesn't work. Well, case after case after case, in other countries, it does work. Oh, and if you have sensible gun laws and regulations, you reduce the level of suicides and shootings and everything else related, accidental shootings. I mean, wasn't there some story about you always see like the 2-year-old, right? Yeah, some crazy toddler shoots somebody. Well, I think I saw a story where like the guy's dog actually somehow fired off a gun.
With his paws.
So, you know, all those things can be fixed, but we have to have a collective agreement that we want to fix them, and it's got to be sincere and it's got to be done.
Mike had talked about visiting Wales a few months back, and there being not a really a gun issue there,
none.
And how do you feel like they handle that, and especially as it relates to the environment, the space that you feel there's not as much gun influence there?
Well, and I mean, one thing was that I initially talked about was the lack of police presence. Like, I didn't see any police officers. I mean, I didn't see police cars. I mean, only time I saw them is when I took the train in. They were there. I mean, they're at the airport. Other than that, you don't see police officers. And so in the United States, we've created an environment that where police officers are at. Why are they there? They're there to protect, right, and to catch. And so it's like this police state that you're living in. And so, again, a nation birthed in what? Violence. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that. I think Tim Wise kind of talks about that. But a nation birthed in violence, this idea of guns being inherently in the Constitution, as if somehow you don't have a right. You know, people in the United Kingdom, they don't think of having a gun as a right. Like, I need to, the whole idea that I need to protect myself from what?
From the other guy with the gun.
That's right. But if when you don't have that permeating throughout your culture, then you eliminate that. I mean, when I was in Scotland in the Navy, Scry Clyde, the police, they didn't have guns. They walked around. And traditionally, they couldn't even arrest you without their hat on. Wow. I mean, they had to put their cover on in order to do that. It's about the tradition. We have a tradition of violence, which is related to gun violence in our country. I mean, how was the native peoples overrun?
We had guns.
I mean, and so when you think about what's happening in Chicago, and Steve, you're so correct, unless we have national dialogue about it, we're never going to solve it. But when you have the NRA and the lobbying interests, when you have money to be made, that's what it boils down to.
Yeah, let me give you an example of that. So everybody's got an iPhone, right? And you've got your thumbprint on there. They could do that with guns. They could have every gun operate only with someone's thumbprint.
Yeah.
Well, they don't do that. And why don't they do that? Because it would cost more money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, at every point, it's a financial decision.
Yeah. And I mean, are we so obsessed with money and power that we sacrifice any type of moral or ethical responsibility to the citizenry?
Has that not also been our history?
I mean, in every circumstance.
and I mean, so when you really think about that, I mean, we're talking about a paradigm and how we view each other. And that's what we've been trying to do on this show, is talk about these tough issues and how we view each other. And unless we come to the table and say, guess what, DT, you matter. Steve, you matter. Richard, you matter. You matter more than the money that I'm going to put in my pocket. Your life matters more. Your children's life matter more than the money we're going to save, because we have this, as we talked about earlier today, me and DT, this educational system, this bureaucracy, that you matter more then somehow, you know, we have a budget, so we got to cut this out of the school system.
Yeah.
When does the individual begin to matter more than economics? I don't know. Yeah, I don't. You know,
that's a deep one,
yeah,
Mike.
Yeah, you know,
because you know, like the line is so, it's so clear and it's so murky too. Because you have to have a level of professionalism that keeps your goodwill out of the picture. You know, it's just all about business, not about what's the right thing to do. But because I have to be this professional in this professional realm, I have to uphold the standards of the business. Not that it has anything to do about how I feel personally, but because this is just business, this is the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you bring up a great point because I studied in my undergrad. I had a professor by the name of Peggy in political science, and she taught a international relations course. And I remember early on in the semester, I would raise my hand and I would say, hey, you know, it's immoral to do such and such. Mm-hmm. And she would say, you know what? There's no morality in international relations. How countries deal with each other, the conversation of morality never kicks in. So when you talk about war, see, we talk about how all the loss of innocent life, that never comes into the conversation. And so really, a lot of these things that we're talking about, you can't talk about morality. You can't talk about moral issues because then it becomes a different conversation. But if it's economics, then it makes pure sense, right?
There's less accountability that way.
I make bullets, right?
My job.
So that's what I do.
Not trying to hurt anybody.
You see what I'm saying?
Just guns, trying to make a living.
You know what? You know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. I mean, that's the argument I can make when it's pure economics. And Steve, we don't want to get you in trouble. We're going to have to, you know, I might have to put a disclaimer out every time we come back and talk on the show. But folks, listen, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be right
back.
Hi, this is Tiffany Hill, host of Authentic Conversations, a weekly motivational podcast where we discuss matters such as self-worth, relationships, parenting, professional development, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. You can find me on Facebook at Authentic Conversations by Tiffany Hill, on social media at @th_authentic, and you can also subscribe to Authentic Conversations on iTunes and Podbean, and the show is also available on blackandstudios.com. I look forward to connecting with you, and remember, to live authentically is the ultimate form of happiness.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. See, Steve got some special mix now.
All right, he's a part of the team now.
But see, hold on. The thing is,
we're trying to show courtesy to our guests. So if you come into One Mic, One Voice studio, you're going to get something.
But you know, you're going to get something. Matter of fact, he's going to leave with something. Richard, we need to make sure that he get the One Mic, One Voice cup before he leaves. Now, it's a real nice cup.
Yeah.
But see, Steve, you need to understand.
It's not this cup?
Oh, no.
No, not the regular plastic.
No. It got no special mix in it either. But one thing I'll say is we don't give everybody special mix. So let me just say you should feel special.
That's true.
Because we've had some folks come in here and ask about the special mix, and we all out.
We've actually had some people come in here and overindulge, if you can believe it or not.
Right.
They've come and taken too much.
Right. Richard laughed.
Yeah,
he definitely knows that. Uh-huh. But folks, we want to talk about the societal perceptions that lead to inequitable treatment, not just by employers, commercial establishment, the education system, judicial system, and now social media. Why? And I just want us to sit back for a minute and just listen to this video by the social critic, the activist, the author, the professor, Tim Wise.
Would a so-called white America not only not understand the issues of policing in black communities, but doesn't want to? That's the claim by Tim Wise, journalist and author, who says that in 1962, 85% of whites said that black children had just as good a chance as white children to get a good education in their communities, a claim so self-evidently absurd in retrospect that it calls into question the ability of whites to perceive even the most elemental realities of the country in which they lived. I spoke with Tim Wise earlier, and I asked him to explain that statement.
You know, it's one thing in 2015 to believe that the United States is a post-racial country. You can almost understand why people would think that, because we have these outward signs, outward manifestations of progress. But the point is, even in the early 60s, before the civil rights laws, when we were still a segregated country, really an apartheid state, white America, by and large, didn't see the problem, even though it was on their television screens every night. I mean, that's the year of the March on Washington, 1962, the year before that, actually. So the fact that white America has consistently, even when things were obvious in retrospect, not seeing the problem tells us that we have a significant gap in perception between white America on the one hand, people of color on the other. And I think that that is what we're seeing with the uprising in Baltimore, in Ferguson, all around the country, that people of color are experiencing the country one way, and therefore they perceive its institutions one way. White America perceives it differently because, by and large, we're experiencing it differently. It isn't that we are uncaring, unconcerned, or mean and evil people. It's that being white means never having to know the reality of those who live a very different experience. And that, to me, is the core of our problem in this country.
20, 30, 40 years from now, do you think the people in this country will look back on this particular time with the same retrospect that we look back into that civil rights era with?
I think it's very possible. I mean, right now, the numbers are very clear that for most white Americans, even though there seems to be some emerging consciousness around police misconduct and criminal justice system disparities, it's very much like it was in the early 60s. There's a core of white folks who seem to be getting that and acting in solidarity with the movement to change that and to make that better, but a vast majority who seem to be completely checked out. So hopefully we'll be able to not take, you know, not have to take 30 or 40 years to see what's right in front of us. Hopefully we can narrow that time frame, because otherwise we're just going to keep repeating these cycles of denial and consternation and anger and hostility rather than coming together to fix the problem.
Certainly. So I want to ask you about this other portion of your article. You talk about the fact that in white America and within white sections of America, there are riots. And you say we do burn our own communities and we do riot for far less valid reasons than any for which persons of color have ever hoisted a brick, a rock, or a bottle. And you bring up things like riots after football games, basketball games, even that pumpkin festival that happened in New Hampshire, how vastly different that is covered by media and perceived by the public versus what we saw in Baltimore, for instance.
Right. I mean, when white folks riot, whether it's after a football game or because Penn State fired Joe Paterno, who had, you know, basically covered up for a child molester on his staff for years, or whether it's Woodstock 99, the music festival in 1999, where, you know, there were literally rapes, assaults, robberies going on in the mosh pit during the concert. White folks, if that had been black folks at a hip hop show in New York City or anywhere else in the country, it would have been looked at as a cultural pathology. So part of our problem is recognizing that a lot of the behaviors that we ascribe to low-income folks, particularly poor folks of color, are just as common among middle and upper middle income white folks, but we don't perceive them the same way. Riots are one, drug use is another. The drug rates, for example, in this country are overwhelmingly identical between white folks and people of color. And yet when it comes to drug arrest, people of color 3, 4, 5 times more likely to be arrested. So we have to de-racialize the idea of pathology. And unfortunately, the media, in terms of how they portray Baltimore and Ferguson and all of these uprisings against police misconduct, have continued to further a narrative that says those people are pathological. They're the violent ones. They're the dangerous ones, rather than looking at this as a larger systemic phenomenon.
Well, and again, I think you make a very important point that the things that many times that take place as a result of riots, whether it be the Pumpkin Festival or what's happening at Woodstock 99, not even close in comparison to the complaints that these people have within black communities, where they're saying we're being arrested at extremely high rates, mass incarceration, and even the killing of young black men at the hands of police officers. I also want to ask you about the housing issue. And you talk about the segregation that's gone on even since the 60s in terms of race-based housing discrimination. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, we know the best estimate suggests there are at least 2 million, maybe as many as 4 million cases a year of race-based discrimination against people of color when they're looking to either purchase a home or rent an apartment. So they're either not shown the same number of units, or they're charged more, they're quoted a higher price, they're given a higher interest rate, they're steered into certain neighborhoods. So even though it's not as blatant and obvious as it was, let's say, you know, before the Fair Housing Act of 1968. It's still happening millions of times a year. That, on top of, as I talk about in the piece, decades of institutional policies that actually destroyed housing in Black communities like Baltimore to put interstates through the heart of the city, or for so-called urban renewal, which really meant building office parks, office buildings, parking lots, shopping malls that white folks would work in mostly, keeping Black and brown folks in the city because they couldn't move to the suburbs because of discrimination. So in fact, the United States and local government combined conspired in a lot of ways. I don't mean it conspiratorially, but worked together to destroy housing for people of color, even as it was subsidizing housing in the suburbs. And that was official government policy right out there in the open. By the late 1960s, one-fifth of all urban housing lived in by Black Americans had been destroyed for this so-called economic development. That's how the ghetto, so to speak, came to be the ghetto. And unless we understand that, we look at the uprising in Baltimore as this purely irrational action based on one incident, the death of Freddie Gray, when in fact it is related to a plethora of incidents over three, four, five, six generations.
And so much of the reason that we view, I think, especially across America, we view these situations kind of in a vacuum is because of the way media covers it. But I want to ask you about one other thing you said here in this article, and it's kind of a stunning statement, but I think it rings true. You say, "I beg to remind you that George Washington was not a practitioner of passive resistance. Neither the early colonists nor the nation's founders fit with the Gandhian tradition. There were no sit-ins at King George's palace, no horseback freedom rides to effect change. There were just guns, lots and lots of guns." I'll give you the last word based on that statement.
Right. I mean, I think that's a critical point to remember, that while we lecture Black folks and poor folks about violence, quote unquote, when they loot, quote unquote, a CVS or a liquor store, we need to remember that change in this country, including the change that most white Americans take for granted, the very founding of the country, was rooted in violence. So for us, white Americans, to lecture Black and brown folks about being nonviolent and being peaceful is sort of precious, given the history of this country, given the face of the American president that is, at least as of now, on the $20 bill, Andrew Jackson. I know they're talking about changing that, but this is a man who was implicated in mass genocide of indigenous people, and yet we're going to tell Black folks to engage in nonviolence. It seems to me we're getting it a little bit twisted. If we want nonviolence at the retail level, we have to practice nonviolence at the wholesale, national, and systemic level. And I guarantee that if that violence, if that institutional violence stops, the retail violence in the streets will stop.
Critically important points. Author and anti-racism activist Tim Weiss, your time and your insight, much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. I mean, wow. What have we been talking about on this show?
Everything that Kat just said.
Everything.
About.
Yeah. Everything he talked about.
I want to jump in, though, as the white guy.
Yeah, okay. Please.
Please do.
I want to defend white guys and their anger towards pumpkins.
Right, right.
What was that about?
I know.
A riot over pumpkins?
I know. I mean, but Steve, the valid point is, why do we see, or I guess the question, why do we see these incidences as so different?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, that's a question really without an answer other than ignorance.
Yeah.
You know, a really good book, that Ta-Nehisi Coates book, that's an excellent book for people to read to kind of get a better sense of. I just think, you know, I don't want to throw everybody under the bus to say that everyone has kind of ill will in this regard, but some people just don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They don't know. They're unaware of those housing practices. Mm-hmm. They're unaware what that means, what the unintended or perhaps intended consequences of that is and was. So education, you know, I think this show is a good example of that. I mean, people need to listen and be empathetic and understand this stuff because it happened and it needs to be addressed in an equitable manner.
Yeah.
Cory Booker has a great, there's a chapter in his book about his parents trying to buy a home in a suburban neighborhood. And they made an offer on the home and, of course, they were denied. And then they went to the housing authority and they came in with a white guy. He walked in. And it, I mean, they said the house was sold. They said they already had an owner, right? Mm-hmm. So they come in with a white guy, and they say, "Oh, yeah, we'll sell that to you." Mm-hmm. And yeah, so then they find out it was a sting, and so his parents got that house. Mm-hmm. And as a result, he grew up in a suburban neighborhood in Newark. But, yeah, it happens every day. I'm not telling you guys anything new. Yeah, it happens every day.
Yeah.
But, again, education is almost always the answer to things.
Yeah. And, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, when you were talking, I was thinking about the same thing happened in Milwaukee where they did. They also did kind of a sting like that with the person that was trying to get an apartment to rent. And, you know, when she showed up, you know, they were like, it's already been rented. Mm-hmm. And then they sent in a white person. And of course, it was available. You know, it was all available. And so I think, yeah, you know, again, I go back to Milwaukee when I talked about fair housing, you know, last week on the show about how it wasn't until the 70s that the Milwaukee passed any fair housing legislation. I mean, it's just crazy. And then then you say the conditions are the conditions of a people when actually, you know, this people had no other choice. Mm-hmm. They couldn't move anywhere. Mm-hmm. Even those that were educated, even those that had money could not move anywhere. Let's talk about Cicero. Okay. Cicero, Dr. King couldn't even march through Cicero in Illinois because of the violence there. The first family that had a house in Cicero, they burned it. First black family, they burned it to the ground. I mean, so when we talk about these issues, Steve, I completely agree with you. You know, I think some people just don't know. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, because growing up, and it's nothing. Listen, you guys, some of you that are listening to my voice know my story. Know I have in my family is a rainbow. I love black people. I love white people. I love all people. Some of my greatest mentors are white people. But that's not going to prevent me from talking about the issues mm-hmm. that we face. Mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know, I'm not hating on anybody. But if we don't have a conversation and deal with the history, like Tim Wise say, man, we were birthed in violence. Mm-hmm. We have a violent society.
Yeah. Well, you recognize, too, I mean, you know, it's a truth in America, and maybe this cuts a little bit more along economic lines than race lines, but sometimes those are the same mm-hmm, thing. Mm-hmm. You know, your outcome, your future is determined in a great deal by what zip code you're born in.
Oh, my mm-hmm. God. Yeah.
And that's not the best way to run a country.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's so many factors that contribute to what you just said. Like, I read an article about the water even. Mm. In Oklahoma City being tainted based on the zip code that you live in. Mm. But back to Tim Wise, you know, he said something very profound that I thought that was very interesting is that, you know, most of the vast majority of white folks have checked out of trying to understand. You know, there are people who are on the side of, okay, well, this is not right. We probably need to do something about this. We probably should take a deeper look into this. But there are most of the people who have said, you know what, I'm comfortable with this. You know, I'm cool with this. I don't want to deal with that. And as I'm sure you have a perspective about this, but, you know, as somebody who is even partaking in this show shows a something about you, you know, that is accepting of a different perspective or even acknowledging that there are different things out there that need to be addressed or need to be taken a deeper look into. So,
yeah. I came for the special mix, but the conversation's good too. Now, part of that, I think, my dad worked for the FAA when he was growing up, and so my upbringing was a lot like, you know, they would call it a military brat. Mm-hmm. And so we lived all over the world, and one of the benefits of living all over the world is that you live in diverse environments. Mm-hmm. And so I went to fifth and sixth grade in Japan, and that classroom is a DOD school, and that classroom was probably 30% white, 30% black, 30% other, quite a few Asians and everything. So, again, some people didn't have that experience, mm-hmm. and some people live a segregated life that they're happy and comfortable in. Mm-hmm. And so some of these things are discomfort, mm-hmm. you know, even to consider them. Yeah. And people don't like discomfort.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they use whatever mechanism to stay away from.
We went to the light bulb room, the Ralph Ellison Foundation put on, and there are lots of whites who explained just what you just said. Mm-hmm. Like, man, I have a hard time talking about black issues or being able to stand in a space where I'm standing up for black people or for people mm-hmm. of color or for injustice in general. Not that it have anything to do with black or white or whatever, but what's wrong is wrong. And right. I have something to say about that. And so I think that there are a lot of people who are even willing or ready to be a catalyst for change, but at the same time are having that same internal battle with themselves about when is the right time to say something.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the upsides of all this, if we can find an upside in this, is that it strikes me that the younger people, and I said I've got an 18-year-old, it strikes me that the younger people are more, they're wired differently. Mm-hmm. And it could be, everyone mm-hmm. cross your fingers, mm-hmm. it could be that while my generation has made a total mess out of almost everything we've touched, that the incoming generations, you know, they have a different view. They're more. I think they tend to be more inclusive. Along all lines, mm-hmm. and maybe if they, you know, are somehow able to hold on to that through all the little curveballs life throws you, you know, maybe we've got better days ahead.
You know, Steve, that is the hope. I mean, we have to cling to that, and I think we have to work to shape the minds. And just going back to a couple of things, and we're going to take a break here in a minute, but going back to a couple of things that you folks have talked about. It's experience. Mm-hmm. It's experience. I mean, if you have experienced different cultures, you see the world differently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you have not, you don't. And let me just say this today. If you have not, I'm not pointing a finger at you. I'm not saying that you're messed up. I'm saying you have simply not experienced that. Mm-hmm. And what I want to encourage you to do is to experience that. Don't make a generalization of any peoples. Well, white people like this. I know black people like that. Okay? I know white people like that, okay? That say about black, well, you're not the typical black. So what does that mean? Okay, here we go again. Okay. So what I'm saying, very special. But
that's a whole nother conversation.
But you know, this is what I'm saying. I'm not mad at you, but what I'm saying, my problem is you two things you don't do. You don't listen and you don't seek out the experience. I guarantee you I can talk to, if I'm talking to, for instance, I was talking to a Latino brother and I was saying how divided the Latino community is from the black community. I said, listen, we need to come together. We need to experience one another. Now, if you're not willing to do that, we're going to remain divided. I have a problem with people that think they know, but they don't know.
They don't know.
What they don't know.
They don't.
Right? That's what we say, right?
Right? They don't know that they don't know.
Right? So that's my problem. So what I'm saying to you today, I don't care whether you in the United Kingdom, I don't care whether you in Eastern Europe, I don't care whether you on the continent of Africa, or you in the United States. Folks, we need to experience each other and be respectful and be empathetic and embrace one another, because that's where learning is. It's not in me assuming that I know you. Mm-hmm. How do I know you? I met Richard, right? Mm-hmm. Smooth brother.
Oh, smooth.
Smooth brother.
Super smooth.
But I didn't know
him. When you get to know him. I'm just kidding.
I just met him like 5 minutes ago, right? And I love the dude.
That's already, right. So. I didn't know Richard until we spent time together, till we went to lunch. So mm-hmm. We talked, and we talked on the phone, this, that, and the other thing. And my observations of him are true. Matter of fact, he's more than what I thought he was. Why? Because I experienced him. Mm-hmm. I didn't make an assumption about what he was or what he was not. That's what we need to do to each and every person that we meet. Folks, we're gonna take a break.
Oh man,
we'll be right
back.
This is Elijah Bailey.
This is Richard Taplin
from the Elijah Bailey Show, bringing you all the content that you could ever desire about anime, manga, comic books, martial arts, fitness, and more.
You can find us at Elijah Bailey Show on the official Facebook page, and also Elijah Bailey Show without the W on Twitter and Instagram.
Make sure to follow, subscribe, like, comment, and rate on iTunes and Podbean.
This is Dr. Paul Ketchum, and I fully support One Mic, One Voice, and I recommend you do the same.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. So, you know, Tim Wise mm-hmm. is a guy that, folks, you need to tune into. Yeah. I mean, he's been talking about things for years that I think moves the social consciousness of our country forward. You don't like listening to me? You don't like listening to DT? I'm going to throw Steve in there. You don't like listening to Steve? Listen to Tim Wise, because we could have went much more deep and to what he tried to say. Mm-hmm. But I got a segue for a minute, man, because hold on a second. See, Steve talked about Elijah Bailey.
Put out a little challenge. He said,
right? He was like, I believe I can take Elijah out.
I want to fight him.
Yeah, I was like,
I want to battle to the death. He said,
I was like, Elijah.
All right.
Are you talking about the same person?
I was like, hold up. Elijah gave me the brother handshake one time, pulled me into the chest, almost broke me. I'm like, you talk about the same Elijah. In the studio, folks, we have the Elijah Bailey. Man. Brother, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Just to be here amongst my people, the people that hold back. That's what we are right now, because Deshaun holds back quite a bit. Michael kind of gave up on holding back over the last couple months, especially on Facebook. But
I knew he was going
to
do this.
I mean, it's good to be here. Thanks for finally having me on the show. 50 episodes.
We're 49.
So it's not even like the 50th, like a big
you
one.
Got
it's like
right
before.
In time.
Okay. Hey man, but Steve said, man,
I walked in and there was a picture on one of these monitors of this totally fearsome looking guy in some kind of karate outfit. And of course, me being a wise Weisenheimer, the first thing I say is, "Oh, I should fight that guy." And they all advise me that's probably a really, really bad idea.
No, man, I'm a big teddy bear. I'm a lover.
He is lying to you.
No, I am.
The guy's not a teddy bear. He's a ferocious lion.
No, I'm a lover. I love
you.
Fighting.
Do not love anything like martial arts and breaking necks and snapping fingers.
Hey, sometimes. You value somebody else's life more than your own, so you have to stand up.
Okay, Elijah's on the One Mic, One Voice show, and he's trying to affront a little bit. But I know Elijah personally, okay?
I was the one who advised Steve, like, look, this is not the guy you want to be trying to
spar
against, trying to prove yourself against. Yeah, this dude is not him.
No. Listen, If I'm in trouble, Elijah is the first person I call.
That's right.
Yeah. I'm like they about. Hey,
back.
Listen. I'm like, yeah. Look, bro.
He definitely got you.
I'm
back.
Like Elijah. They about to jump on me, bro.
Where you at?
Where you at, Mike?
How long? How long is gonna take?
Just come on, get down. I'm talking trash, and you get down here.
Because I remember you called me because some guys were following you.
Not me.
No, it was your cousin or your friend or something. Some fight broke out, and Deshaun was like, "Dude, there's." It was like five or six guys following us, and I said, "Well, just let me know when you get there. I'll be on my way."
That's the type of dude. Oh my gosh! Listen, Elijah has given me my confidence, okay? Because I have to train with this cat, and as much of a killer as he is, you know, like I have to deal with that when I'm training against him because he hold me to that level of standard. Like, okay, Deshaun, are you either going to be a killer, or you're going to be a cat, a kitten, you know? So,
well, I've watched some of the videos.
Of Elijah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm here to tell you, the brother's dangerous. So, Steve, you my boy, I love you. I want to keep you on the planet Earth.
Man.
You know what? That's a challenge that we not going to do. Okay, because we want to keep you. We need to keep you on planet Earth because I believe Elijah.
We're not ready for you to transition just yet, because that's what's next in your future.
Hey man, but you know what?
Transition.
But just to talk about for a minute, man, before we transition here, man, I love the shows, man. I love listening.
Thank you.
When you guys go live, you know, I'm always putting in my smiley face, man. But I just appreciate the work that you do. And I'm going to tell you why I really love what you do, because you inspire other people. You give back to other people. You build other people up. You bring other people into the fold. So that tells me you have a heart beyond just what Elijah can do. And, man, I just want to commend you on the One Mic, One Voice for being who you are.
Wait before you respond. Elijah, listen, I know from experience that you do it for no money sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, even being somebody who didn't pay you for some time, you know, like Elijah still show up and come ready to work, man, ready to help you be the best you. You know, it's not like he expected anything for himself, but that he is in the same space that allow you to be your best, you know. And that's something that I know by experience and by knowing you, that's something that you kind of attribute your success to and your name to, because I can call Elijah for anything. I don't have to even be talking about martial arts. It could be anything in regards to life, just every day trying to be successful. Elijah has on the t-shirt right now that says, "When you want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe." That's how you know you'll be successful. And just those little nuances and those little things that Elijah bring to the table are things that empower the people that he come in contact with. It's not just that he's somebody who you see and for that moment that is what you want to hear. Elijah is this way all the time, 24/7.
Beautiful thing, man.
This is the guy you want to be in contact with. Trust me. And I appreciate that.
Follow his show, folks. Tune in to his show. And, you know, you're doing remarkable things, man. And it's a pleasure to know you. It's a pleasure to know Richard. It's a pleasure, man, because I came involved with these two brothers.
You haven't even fought with them yet, though, Michael.
Yeah, huh?
You haven't even fought with them, though, yet.
You got to send me the thing to follow you.
I follow Black and Studio. I didn't say follow. I said fought.
No, that's never happened. Okay, let me let United Kingdom know. Let me let Africa know. Let me let the Eastern Europe know. And United, it ain't happening.
Sean is fine. Richard's fine.
I'm alive, bro.
I'm trying to breathe. So I'm wise enough. As they say in the old vernacular, mama ain't raised no fools. Listen, folks, we having a great time here at One Mic, One Voice. We'll be right back.
This is DT of the One Mic, One Voice podcast. Just want to let you guys know you can go over to iTunes and search us at One Mic, One Voice and be sure to rate and review our episodes. Let us know about any feedback that you have and what you enjoy about the episodes. Also, you can go over to Stitcher where you can get the latest and freshest episodes of our podcast streamed directly to your smartphone or iPad. No downloading or syncing. How cool? Real smooth. Also, we'd just like to take the time to thank you for your time and for your energy and for spending time with us as we discuss the historical record of our time.
This is Dr. Laura Gillott, and when I listen to podcasts, I always listen to the One Mic, One Voice show.
Man, hey, that. Oh, hold on. Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Man, that was a funny segment, man. Right. I mean, I love Elijah, man. I mean,
Elijah on the show for the first time.
But hold on. I had to point out to him during the break, we ain't been on his show.
That's true.
So let's equal the playing field.
So when he need to invite us on to the one, I mean, to the Elijah Bailey show too.
He needs to invite us on there. And let me hold on. So Steve, what you think now? Well, after seeing him in person.
Yeah, you got to see me as scared as I've ever been. Completely walking.
Yo,
back.
Steve talks a lot of noise about Elijah before the show started.
Noise is the key word.
Yeah. See, I saw the video, so I'm of no misconception about how it would go in the ring.
Oh my gosh.
right. But you know, as crazy as that was, I want to go ahead and folks. We want to run something that Mr. Trump talked about.
I say it again. What do you have to lose? Look, what do you have to lose? You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose? And at the end of 4 years, I guarantee you, that I will get over 95% of the African American vote, I promise you. Because I will produce for the inner cities, and I will produce for the African Americans. And the Democrats will not produce, and all they've done is taken advantage of your vote. That's all they've done. And once the election's over, they go back to their palaces in Washington, and you know what? They do nothing for you. Just remember it. So you have nothing to lose. One thing we know for sure is that if you keep voting for the same people, you will keep getting exactly the same result.
We have nothing to lose.
Nothing to lose. Every black person is the same. All living in poverty.
Exactly,
you know,
right?
That was really the problem I had with the video is that he kind of generalized us all. Like, okay, We know you're living in poverty. We know you don't have any jobs. Right. We know that every black person is the same. Right. And that's how I'm addressing the situation. But that's not the truth, man. So
no,
what do you think?
We'll defer to Steve on some of this. But I made a comment that I'm not in poverty. I'm highly educated. Okay. I own my own home.
Oh.
Okay. I'm matter of fact, I'm living on 14 acres. Okay. So
Mike, don't put it out there like that.
I'm gonna put it out there like that. Because what he's saying is, what do I have to lose? I have everything to lose by voting for you.
Everything.
I mean, what you know, how racist is that to take every black person and marginalize and demoralize them to the point where they are nothing, and that he is the savior.
Yeah, he's giving us an opportunity.
Yeah.
He's going to create jobs, going to make a way for all the African-Americans.
Well, he didn't say, you know, as Richard pointed out, he didn't even say he was going to create jobs. He said he's going to get all of our votes in four years.
First of all.
Okay. 95% of our votes he will get in 4 years. Doesn't say what he's going to do, but we're going to vote for him because he's the savior.
Yeah,
I don't know, Steve, man. What is your observation?
Steve, what do you have to lose?
You have to lose everything. I'm assuming you guys are in the 5% that won't be in that vote. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to sound like an ignoramus at any time in your life, put the word "the" in front of a group of people. Yeah. So you say the African Americans.
Yeah.
Right there tells you completely tone deaf. Yeah. No empathy, no understanding, no shared experiences, as you said earlier. I have nothing nice to say.
I mean, it's hard, right? It's hard to say something constructive. And I want to be able to listen to the other side and to be, I think, to be balanced.
Yeah, there is no balance. There is no other side as far as this particular candidate is concerned.
Yeah.
And I saw today, before I came up here, I saw on CBS Morning News or something, they had a focus group, and they were talking to some people about Trump, and they asked him that, you know, they asked him if they initially liked him, and they were all Republicans, and they said they did. They asked him how many liked him now, and about six of the probably 20 people raised their hands. Mm-hmm. And then they ask, you know, what would he have to do to get your vote back? Mm. And I'm thinking to myself, if your brain operates at the speed where he can get your vote back, there's something wrong with your brain.
Yeah, something. Wow. Yeah, there's absolutely, man. I believe in competition. I believe in the battle for ideas, but clearly, this dude is clueless when it comes with to race, and it's offensive.
Well, yeah, he, you know, to appeal to the Hispanic Latino vote, he showed that, you know, he tweeted that picture of him eating a taco salad. It's like, you know, that to him, that's a relationship.
Yeah.
And that's just it's appalling.
Yeah. I mean, that's like
my question, Mike, is who is responsible for the PR?
Yeah,
like, as the PR person, like, how do you advise Donald Trump?
He's on his third team now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, his initial comment that, you know, he always likes to say he's the greatest, and I'm going to succeed because I'm going to surround myself with the best people, the best people, right? And now he's on his third campaign team. Yeah, so, obviously, he's failed even in that regard.
On his third marriage, too.
Right.
Someone
pointed that out.
I don't know
during,
the exact number, but I'm just
no, it's his third.
But evangelicals are backing him, you know, pretty much close to 90% in numbers. And, again, I mean, he doesn't even know anything about the Bible. He talks about 2 Corinthians, not 2 Corinthians.
Two
Corinthians.
He was actually referring to 2 specific Corinthians.
Corinthians
walked into a bar. It's huge.
I mean, it's laughable, right? I mean, really, if you're on the outside looking in, and I know people are motivated by their beliefs and what they see the direction of the country going in, and that it is tainted by that. But clearly, if you step outside the electorate and look at what he is saying, it is divisive, it is racist, it is hateful. Mm. This guy has said, I could shoot people and still my poll numbers would go down.
Right.
I'm just thinking, in New York City, when we had 9/11, when we have all these atrocities, I'm thinking, what does it take for you to step back and go, okay, enough is enough, okay? And again, I'm not advocating for Hillary Clinton. I'm not advocating for that. But what I'm advocating is for decency and for respect of people. And wherever you fall in that spectrum, that's okay with me. But this guy does not represent the best of our country. And I think regardless whether you're a Democrat or Republican, how many Republicans have come out and said?
Right, right. It's a long list.
It's a long list of people that come out and say, look, this is not who we are. Mm-hmm. And I think people have to move beyond how they feel the country should go and understand that, listen, this guy is seriously a danger to our democracy. Mm.
So it sounds like the 95% is going to be a tough get for
him. Yeah, right. 95% of African Americans, though. Not just 95% of the
vote. No, right, no. Right. Let me take Donald. It's never going to happen. Let me look into Facebook Live.
Okay, look
say,
at him.
Donald, it's never going to happen. Give up. I know you got some black folks that are on the hook.
Got a couple black friends.
Yeah, you got somebody that, you know, you got this black church. Look, the majority of us, we see right through you. We understand the rhetoric that's coming from your mouth. We don't appreciate it. And please, simply, go bye-bye. That's all I can say.
You remember that one time where he was like on an airplane, or he was giving an outdoor rally, and he said, there's my African-American.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. There's my African-American.
What?
Right. My African-American. Yeah.
What?
I don't know, man. Do you want to be owned? I don't know. How have you been since you haven't been like owned, you know, picking cotton? Like we said on the, I don't know.
Wow.
Michael's Facebook page just exploded.
Wow. But listen, yes. I enjoy some level of freedom, you know. Yeah. Not that I have it all, but I have an equal level of freedom that allow me to do what I need to do. And that's okay with me. But under Donald Trump control, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be back to being a slave.
You're his African American.
Or in other words,
No, we won't. we not gonna go there. Hey, transitioning right quick.
Okay, yeah. So Ebony and Ivy mm-hmm. talks about a distinction between African Americans and Ivy League schools, right? Mm-hmm. And how Ivy League universities have had a very unique and what was the word? I guess I would say
beneficial
relationship with African Americans and the American Institute as a whole. So not that they have been excluded from the influences of slavery or the other things that contributed to Jim Crow and other things like that. Ebony and Ivy gives a good depiction of how universities have used racial influence and things like that to benefit themselves over time.
Absolutely. It's our first book for our book club. Please pick it up. Post a picture of it. Like DT says, when you get the book, our Ivy League universities have benefited from slavery, folks. Man, it's been a great show.
Man,
and having
fun.
Steve on here.
Even with Steve not wanting to fight Elijah at the end of it all.
Yeah, that's okay, man, because I'm thinking about backing out my ping pong challenge with DT.
You better not. I've been training, man. Yeah, because, cannot pull back now.
He been doing all these techniques while he's sitting over there, man.
Left spin, right spin.
It's been scaring
me. Top spin, back spin. I've been working on
it. Man, it's been scaring me, man. You can't show me the video before it happened, man. It happened with Elijah.
Hey, listen, get ready, Mike, because I'm serious about this.
Facebook Live.
Oh, it's going to go Facebook Live.
Okay. I think our listeners want it. We have to give our listeners what they want.
That's true.
But you might have to spot me, though, bro.
No.
We go up to, hey, listen. We go up
listen,
to.
Listen, hold on.
We go up to 10. You spot. We go up to
11 is the base score.
Okay. We go up to 11. You spot me 10.
Richard.
He was the one who issued the original.
I'm saying, but that allowed him the ability to be spotted 10 points.
Okay.
To win. That's not fair.
Okay, man. You just eight or something. You
I'd
know,
still put my money on DT.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about.
You got your supporters already, man. But yeah, we going to do that, man. It's been a great show. 49, 50's coming up because we realize, folks, that history will speak of us. somewhere in the distant future, Scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.
We can make a difference if we try. We can beat the change that's in our lives. All we gotta do is work together. We gotta raise our children better. We gotta stop the hate, and spread the love.
One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice. One mic, one voice. You can change the world, it's your choice.
Your choice.
Today's broadcast is being brought to you by Blacken Studios. To learn more about Blacken Studios, please visit them at blackenstudios.com or visit them on their Facebook page, Blacken Studios. Today's broadcast is also being brought to you by Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. To learn more about Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, please visit their website at perrypublishingandbroadcasting.net. The opinions of the One Mic, One Voice show do not reflect the views of Blacken Studios or Perry Publishing and Broadcasting. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show.